know that this will have to have justice, and we will be able to see Marissa, because this is out of control again because of the decades of the prison crisis and because of this thing called slavery by another name. It's intentional disregard of the law. It's deliberate indifference.
Alida, I want to thank you for being with us. Alida Alston Trey, founder of the New Jim Crow Movement in Jacksonville, Florida, has met with Marissa Alexander in jail, writes to her. They are ending up the group of protesters in Sanford tomorrow for a Trayvon Memorial. Seema Iyer, thanks so much for being with us as well. That does it for the show. A very special thank you to Julie Crosby. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Berk, Renee Felser, Amati Nirmin Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkovhani, Masood Rabi, Karen Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. My name is Jay Koronek, station advisor here at WHFR-FM, an independent station from Henry Ford Community College. We're the station making waves, doing things a little differently than any other station around, and that's for your own good. So you're really special that you found us, and I hope you are interested in Dearborn and issues from the surrounding area, news and alternative views about what's going on in our city. I'm joined in the studio by my WHFR News Director, Dennis Reimars. Welcome, Dennis.
Thank you. I enjoy being here.
Okay. Well, I'm glad to have you here again because we have two great guests that we're going to grill for 15 minutes each, verbally speaking.
Sure.
With us right now for the first interview, we're doing a series, you know, folks, on Dearborn City Council candidates. Altogether, there's 21 names that will be on the primary ballot. That is just 10 days from now or so, 10 or 11, Tuesday, August the 6th. Hope you registered to vote in Dearborn. And if you are, you've got a lot of choices. I think there's 5 for mayor, but there's also 21 for city council.
That's right.
Now, eventually 7 will get elected after the November election, but I think this will narrow the field down from 21 to 14.
That's right.
And then you'll see 14 different names, some incumbents in that probably, in November. We thought we'd try to introduce you to as many challengers as would want to take our offer of giving them time here. And we're asking pretty much the same questions of all of them. Sometimes we ask an extra question or two for clarification's sake. But first of all, we have today on the show for the next 15 minutes, Colette Richards here in the studio. Welcome, Colette, to WHFR-FM. You've been here before, but under a previous name?
Yeah, yes, I have.
Okay, well, we won't ask for that story.
I can tell you.
No, but well, just tell us about your background in general. Let's get started with the interview as we ask all the folks. Give us a brief biography for yourself, your education, jobs, any other relevant experience that would lead towards this city council position.
Oh, okay, well, actually, I am a graduate of Mercy High School in 1987. And I went on and moved out of the state to San Diego and got my associate's degree at San Diego Community College. And when I moved back here, I pretty much spent most of my time working in a retail establishment as a manager. And then when I had my son, I became a stay-at-home mom, self-employed, selling party light candles for 15 years. In fact, I'm just finishing up that right now. And when about a year and a half ago, I got a job with the Dearborn Public Schools. I'm a media secretary. I work at 3 different buildings, which is really cool because I get to work with all age groups from preschool all the way up to high school. It was a lot of fun to do that. When my son was born. He had special needs. He had some issues when he was when I was pregnant with him. He ended up having a stroke in utero. So because of that, I kind of got thrown into an area of special education advocacy by default. And what happened with that was it actually put me involved with the schools, working very hard to get him what he needed for his education purposes. And I took that knowledge and brought it out to other parents. So I basically spent the last 8 years advocating for other parents with special needs children and helping them get what they needed. And then I got involved with the PTA, spent 4 years as PTA council president, which led me to find a unique ability to work with people from all over the city. And as we discussed earlier when I first got here, parents are a very different breed. We really fight for our children, and it really helped me come to grips on how to work with different people and how to come to compromises. And compromising with all different groups of people and finding a really good solution for everyone involved is basically what I did on the PTA Council with special ed parent advocating. So I got the political bug several years ago. I've been helping out with different campaigns. I helped out with Roxanne McDonald's school board campaign for 3 years, and I've worked with George Duraney on his city council campaign and his state rep campaign. Mm-hmm. And because of all of that experience, it kind of got me involved with the politics side of the city. I'm also very involved with the community. I've been a member of the Relay for Life of Dearborn for the last 6 years, and I was on the planning committee for the last 5 years. I'm also a Dearborn Rotarian and have been for the last 3 years. I'm sitting on the board of directors.
Because of your business.
Yeah, it started out with my business, but it also started out with being on the PTA Council and being a representative of the schools.
Yeah, a lot of nonprofit organizations are members of the Rotary, too.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. And I actually really enjoy being involved with the Rotary. It gives me a chance to get out in the community and do some community service. It also gives me a chance to work with a lot of the schools because we have interact clubs that are at the high schools, and we also have we actually now have a Rotaract club right here at HFCC that I helped start up a year ago. So that really helped. That really gets me involved in the community on all different levels. And I'm also a City Beautiful commissioner and have been for 3 years. So there you go. So that's my experience right there in a nutshell.
I don't know if you were responsible, but somebody was for. I got one of those little awards, those little decals last year.
You did?
Yeah, for my house being beautiful or something.
Somebody on my on the committee with us did that for you. So congratulations. That's a very good thing.
It wasn't you, Colette?
I don't know. Depends on where he lives.
I have to be honest. my daughter had been sharing my residence for the last couple of years. She has her own place now in Allen Park, but she did all the landscaping for 2 years, and that really made the place look nice. She was
so she won the
meticulous
award.
In a way, yeah. But the decal is still mine; it won't come off the door.
So. Well, it's no on your door, so yeah. That's what matters.
No matter how hard you try,
she can't use that decal in Allen Park now. So,
well, no. Congratulations to your daughter then.
Those are nice little special things for people in the community who have done a good job. It's always nice. Some little thank you that's not too expensive for the city to keep the spirit up and to keep us looking good. Just a brief aside, because you mentioned two things, the schools, and even though schools are not directly under city council, they're not under city council legally at all, but how are special needs doing in the Dearborn Public Schools? How are those needs being met these days?
They've actually really worked a lot with streamlining a lot of the way that the services were given through. There are certain services that they give for general education students and for special education students, and they streamline them together to make it more effective and more cost efficient for the schools. So in some cases, it works really well, and we're getting more of our special needs students mainstreamed and included in most of general ed classes now with support. And so they've really done a lot of work with that.
I'm glad to hear about the support thing. My daughter is a school teacher at seventh grade level in Southfield Public Schools, mm-hmm. and they have no support. And she has a majority of her seventh grade science class are people who have not just special needs, but they're really got severe emotional and physical problems.
Okay.
And she has no support help now.
And I don't know
how you can get along with that. It's got to be against some state law. She did have a part-time person up until 2 years ago, okay. And now she's all alone. And she's got, it's not just mainstream having a couple of people that need special attention in the classroom. She had a majority of her 35 students. And we're talking about, physical abuse between students, mm-hmm. Throwing of chairs, fists, violence against the teachers, every day.
Yeah, she probably had a lot of the children that have emotional impairment problems and
right.
things like that.
Yeah, for some reason they decided, well, we'll put all on science because all they do is experiments, blowing things up, and so they'll be fine. They don't have to read or study at all. And, of course, whatever the excuse is for her being dumped on, she said that was what the excuse they gave off the record, of course. That's not the way to handle a situation. You need at least – I mean, she has no, and she'll admit it. She was not hired for special ed.
No.
She has no certificate, no training, no background.
Yep.
She's doing the best she can. She's learned enough to try to mm-hmm. keep things together somehow, but is education happening for anyone? No, not in that situation.
And I wouldn't say so. One of the things we do here is we have co-teaching. And co-teaching are two teachers. You have a teacher that has a special education background, and you have a teacher who's a general ed teacher. And at the high school and the middle school, they do a lot of co-teaching within those classes. So some of these classes that have children like that mm-hmm. that are in a gen ed setting, they put a special ed teacher with the general ed teacher, and then they have two teachers that are working with the kids at the same time.
Well, that seems much more appropriate.
It does, yeah.
And thank you for that little aside.
No problem.
Moving on to question two here. We'll get there, folks. I'll subtract that from your time here, your time limit. And it's somewhat controversially stated anyway. Mayor O'Reilly and his policies, pro or con?
Well, for me, it's never a yes or no answer. So, what I think personally is that some of the things that the mayor does are really, really good for the city, and some of the things that he does are not. And that's just my personal opinion. I am the kind of person that will look at every side of an issue and decide on if I agree with what he's saying or if I don't agree with what he's saying. I like to listen to the citizens and what they like, what they want to hear, what they want in the city before making that full decision, whether I agree with what the mayor is saying or whether I don't agree with what he's saying.
Give me an example of a recent decision that you were not in agreement with, a decision by him.
Well, it's one of the questions that's coming up about new City Hall versus, do you want me to wait
jump,
for that?
We can
just go
it.
Into it?
Yeah,
okay.
Question four, new City Hall versus old.
Okay, well, we'll do that one.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Yeah, it's a really big one. The problem with the new City Hall versus the old City Hall is I think it was how it was given to the residents. And the residents didn't know anything about them buying a building until it was already purchased. A lot of people are very upset because they closed some pools, they closed a library a couple years ago, and then they went and found $3.5 million to buy a brand new building to move a city hall. I'm not necessarily against moving city hall because when you look at the numbers and how much it's going to cost to renovate what they're in and upkeep it every year versus what it will be to do the new city hall, it's actually cost efficient to move to the new city hall. I just don't necessarily agree with how it was given to the residents and the fact that they closed other things saying they had no money and now all of a sudden they have money. And that is one of the things that I don't agree with. I think that there's something wrong there. And where did the money come from that we didn't have 2 years ago that we could have kept some things open, the services and amenities that the residents that moved here for that specific reason. And now we're going to lose people, and we are losing people because they don't have the same services and amenities that they had just a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm. I said, too, on this show many times, but if there would have been more time, and maybe the building was going to be sold to somebody else, maybe they thought it was a fire sale and the price was going to go up or something, and they just had to take action. But I would bet, for the sake of the history of the location, as happened in Dearborn many years ago for Fortson High School, which is a classic architectural landmark,
right.
The voters were asked, will you put in significantly more money not only to fix it up, but also continue to operate this very old building?
Exactly.
And they voted in extra millage to continue to do that, at that time, anyway. And I was just thinking, if that would have gone on the ballot quickly, will you put together, will you vote for a bond that increases mills by so much to, like, $11 million worth of repairs for City Hall? In fact, how is art space going to not just renovate to put living spaces there, but, you know, the building's flooded twice in the last couple of weeks. They hope to get grants to pay for all that, of course, but this, the city hall is, but would the voters, and I don't know, but would the voters in this current economic climate have voted the extra money to keep city hall where it is, understanding that it's going to cost more to operate, and it's going to take all that money, $11 million or whatever, to renovate it and to fix it up finally, which should last a few more years, though. So I'm just saying, I bet the people of Dearborn in general, if not too many of them, if most of them still have their jobs, they would have voted to keep City Hall and to renovate it.
Oh, and don't forget, part of the initial conversation was, in fact, the Tenneck building, the administrative building, and they were talking about, do we want to renovate the school building as opposed to having them move together to New City Hall? And we had Dave Mustonen on the show, and he made it very clear that that is not the plan right
exactly.
now. That is not the plan. So that's not something the voters maybe that was put on the table to sell it. I don't know.
Well, and it should have been brought out to the voters. And that is the biggest issue with this whole situation and why people are very upset by it. And because it was never brought to us to vote to do that like they did with Fordson.
Okay. Well, and look, I'm just going to jump back quickly, though. You're going to run for city council. Why not run for mayor?
I love that question. I actually kind of giggled when I read it. I really think that it's not something that I'm ready for. I think that you really need to be involved a little bit more within the city government before you can just jump in and say, I can be mayor and I can do this job. And I really think that that would be putting me way up there at a level that I'm not ready to be at. So I just feel that city council is a little bit more my style right now.
There's a natural progression, I noticed.
And it is a natural progression. I don't think that the average citizen, and don't get me wrong, because there are some great citizens out there that could be a mayor. I just don't think that they know what they're getting into if they've never actually been involved with the city government. It's hard enough for me. I don't know everything about what goes on with city council, and I'm running for a position that I don't know everything about.
Even just attending city council meetings is not the full picture of what's going on.
Exactly.
I know the mayor even shared with me a couple months ago after an interview I did with him that certain people that might run against him, for example, from the city council, although they chose not to, no names here, of course, but maybe you know who I'm referring to,
had never
been to a supplemental budget hearing. Now, I guess there's additional meetings. I don't know if they're open to the public. Budget reviews, going over all kinds of extra detailed information and facts. And so some of the council members, it's only, of course, a part-time job, but, they didn't have all the information that the city was even trying to provide to them. Of course, it is a part-time job. Will you keep your day job if elected?
Yes, I would love to. It gives me my benefits.
even though it's not a lot of money, it's a part-time job.
Right.
What is it, $10,000?
$14, I think.
$14,
right. And then there's a meeting stipend.
Yeah, but still. And no benefits because it's part-time, right? There's no health benefits or...
I've heard that there are, but there weren't before, so I don't think there are. I don't know, but
so you're not running for the health care, no.
It doesn't matter because, you know, most of the stuff that the work is done in the evening anyway with the city council. And I work a day job that's not all year. I'm only a 10-month employee with the school, so I'm off every summer.
Right.
And I'm off on breaks. So that does give me a little bit of an advantage.
Flexibility there.
Yeah, it does.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep. Jumping to our fifth question, the city cuts to budget versus income. Now, a lot of candidates for office, of course, say that, yes, we have to make some cuts, and yes, we've got to increase revenues. And I have to say, I'm always a little bit questioning with it. Well, we need to bring more business in. Is that the only answer? I mean, I know they pay taxes if there's a new business there or they're filling a vacant space, and it's fine. That's the only answer? I mean, it seems kind of narrow, but I don't know. It takes a lot of creative thinking and the work of a lot of people on a lot of these issues. Well, how do you feel about the pro and con there? Do you think there's parts of the budget right now that you know should be cut? Do you know ways of generating new income?
Well, I really think that when you're dealing with a budget, you know, there's so many different facets to it. It's very hard to decide where you can cut versus where you're not going to cut. And I think that, honestly, I think a lot of people need to think about alternative ways of increasing revenues. And I do understand why people say, well, we need to bring more business to Dearborn. Because when we do bring more business to Dearborn, there are more people that are coming to Dearborn, more people that may be moving to Dearborn. Building up our communities and building up our neighborhoods, okay, we'll get that more revenue in because, you know, there's a lot of vacant homes, a lot of homes that are being demolished because they were vacant for so long. And we have holes, you know, throughout our community that we really need to fill with residents, filled with businesses that does bring revenue. But there has to be an alternative program to bring in revenue, I'm not saying raising taxes or anything like that, because nobody is going to want to raise taxes. Everybody is very short with their money. They're working more than one job to make ends meet. So nobody really wants to do that. So I really think that we need to find alternative ways to raise that revenue.
Although it's a tough sell, but the city did get that supplemental millage, and the argument was, well, your taxes have been going down, you know. Like my taxes, I looked at my bill for this year, they dropped another $300. I didn't ask for that, but, you know, my assessed valuation seemed to stay the same. I compared it. But my actual tax bill is $300 less.
Right.
Now, this. Well, I'm happy about saving $300. What will I spend that on? Will it happen
Gas.
All at once? Or yeah. Well, obviously, energy costs go up all the time, and there's other things in society you need the money for.
Right.
But in fact, I felt sorry. I said, oh, my gosh, City of Dearborn is losing out on $300 from me, you know, and they need the money. I mean, all for the good of the whole community.
Right.
And will I write an extra check? No, I'll pay whatever my fair share is, hopefully. That wasn't a mistake, and I'll get a supplemental bill saying, oops, we made a mistake. But thank you for that. Colette Richards is the candidate for Dearborn City Council. We've been talking to for the last, about the last 15 minutes, but I'm giving her a couple of extra minutes here to finish up some of the questions since I jumped in and was starting to pontificate. How do you feel about the city essentials? You already mentioned that pools, libraries deserve our continued support. Historical Museum, Fire Department, 19th District Court. How do you feel about some of those?
Okay, well, I can touch on a few of those for sure, especially since we have limited time. One of the things that I really support is fire and police. And the reason why I support that is obviously, you know, with the decline in the economy, we're having a little bit more issues with break-ins and crime. We need those policemen out there on the streets. And the way the city charter is written, it's written for a reason so that we feel safe in Dearborn. And I've talked to several residents who don't feel safe in Dearborn. And I would like to change that so that they are safe in Dearborn. I don't think that touching, you know, staffing levels as far as decreasing them is necessarily obviously the answer in that. I support that. Firefighters, same thing. My son, as I said, has special needs. And if it wasn't for the firefighters on two different occasions coming to my house rather quickly and helping me, you know, I don't know if he would be here today. So in that aspect, I have a little bit of a personal issue, obviously, issue with that. I really would not want to touch on fire and police at all in any way, shape, or form. They do a phenomenal job, and I really think that we need them. We need them here supporting us and making sure we're safe. People, when they do move in, they feel safe. They feel safe. This is a good place to live, especially being in close proximity to Detroit.
We have special extras in the city, like the operation of Camp Dearborn,
right.
Which is the Mystic Creek operation, and the Herndon Golf Course, too, which is operated by the city. I think they're kind of breaking even. Mayor O'Reilly talked about a new animal shelter, maybe where the old train station, where it will become the old train station when the new train station opens, but I don't think the city's going to fund that. They're just going to maybe give the property.
Yeah.
But here's a question, one of my final big or little questions. West Dearborn paid parking, and also those towers, which I don't think are paid off yet, but not much used.
Yeah. They don't get a lot of use.
So do you think, at least on this issue, pro or con, that we should drop the paid parking issue? You know, and it would increase business, I assume, maybe even encourage some businesses to get in some empty spaces in West Dearborn. How do you need more information on that? How do you feel about that?
I would probably need a little bit more information as far as where we stand, as far as making up any of the money that we've lost in that situation. The timing of when they put in the paid parking and the economy decline all happened at the same time, it's very hard to tell whether it was specifically because paid parking went in or because the economy started taking a decline. A lot of the businesses do not like the paid parking, and I understand. I mean, I go out and I do hit up the businesses, and we have to put quarters in the meters. So Yeah, I don't know. I think if it was cost efficient for us to remove them, I just think it's not necessarily something we really need to have right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to sum up. Collette Richards, candidate for Dearborn City Council, primary election August 6th. Be sure to vote if you're registered. Please just conclude by giving us your contact information, what you have, whether it's a website or a phone number. When can people meet and greet you if you know of a personal appearance, like fundraising or a debate or something coming up? I think you mentioned you're going to be walking around homecoming. Come to the WHFR tent for a while.
I
try to get you
will.
On the air there too, a supplemental question or two. What other contact information do you have?
I do have a website. It's really simple, coletterichards.com, and it's Colette Richards, Richard okay. with an S on the end, mm-hmm. .com. Simple, simple. Not two L's, though. Everybody seems to misspell my name. And I have an email if anybody wants to email me. It's Colette, then the number 4, citycouncil@gmail.com. Colette4citycouncil@gmail.com. I'm accessible via email 24/7. It's attached to my phone. So there you go. And I will be at homecoming all weekend wearing my blue shirts with my name on it. And I will also be at a chamber event on Tuesday night over at the Andiamo's. It's now Vic something. I don't remember the name of the steakhouse.
Joe Vaccaro's.
That's
Italian
it.
Steakhouse.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
I will be there Tuesday night for about an hour and a half.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for being on the WHFR Journal today. Good luck to getting your message out. I know you mentioned also you've been going door to door a great deal.
Yes.
So
yes, I have.
Hopefully you don't have too many people slamming it in your face.
No, I haven't yet. It's a good thing.
Good, yes, because it's participating in the system and, in fact, choosing to be an elected representative. It's a tough call, folks. It's not easy to get there. You sort of have to do it, put a lot of your own energy into it, certainly, especially for local elections. So thank you for taking on that challenge, and good luck to getting your message out, and maybe we'll see you at homecoming.
All right. Thank you very much.
This is the new WHFR Journal. Here's a couple of issues. Here's one from Jim Hightower, commentary for today, along with some information about Dearborn Homecoming. And we'll be back also with an interview with Mike Zarini, who is running for council also.
It's so great, truly heartwarming, to see billionaires devoting their deepest thoughts to finding solutions for eradicating poverty. For example, I can't begin to tell you how grateful America's homeless people are going to be once they hear about Andy Kessler, who's been thinking long and hard about their plight. Kessler is a former hedge fund whiz, which means he was in the business of making, well, money. Beaucoup bundles of it. But having seen his 16-year-old son volunteer at a homeless center, he was motivated to develop a plan to solve homelessness. And here it is. Stop dishing out soup to those people and shut down all the shelters. Yes, the problem is all this volunteering and charitable giving. These homeless folks ought to be working, he told his son, but he lectured they're not, because someone is feeding, clothing, and in effect bathing them. Golly, Andy, I recall that Jesus said something about our godly duty to feed and clothe the needy, and even to wash the feet of the poor. But apparently Jesus just did not grasp the essence of true morality. Blessed are the rich is Kessler's spiritual mantra. Where does the money come from to help the unfortunate, he asked. And yea, I say unto thee, the holy hedge funder answered his own deep question. It comes from someone who worked productively and created wealth. Thus, he sagely concluded, the answer to poverty, to truly helping the poor, is not to pamper the takers, but to provide more tax breaks for the makers of wealth, like him, the ones who produce, quote, good old-fashioned economic growth. This is Jim Hightower saying, wow, what a role model this guy is for his son and for all of America's youth. Wouldn't you like to buy him for what he's worth and sell him for what he thinks he's worth? That would fund a whole lot of homeless programs, wouldn't it?
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Dearborn is celebrating its 34th annual Homecoming Festival this August 2nd, 3rd, and 4th in West Dearborn at Ford Field Park. 22051 Cherry Hill. Come and experience the live music, great food, family activities, a carnival, and not to mention a spectacular firework display on Saturday and Sunday night. So make your way back home this August 2nd, 3rd, and 4th for the 34th Annual Homecoming Festival in West Dearborn at Ford Field Park, 22051 Cherry Hill.
This is the new WHFR Journal. I am Dennis Reimars, and I'm here with Jay Cornick, who left the studio just for a second. And we are, as promised, you know, let me get this set up here. We do air checks right on the air live. As promised, we're here. We just had the wonderful conversation with Colette Richards, and we have in studio Mike Cerini. If that name seems familiar to you, it probably should. Mike is the family has been a big part of the community for a long time, and I welcome you and I thank you for coming here and sharing some time with us.
Oh, thank you so much, Dennis. I appreciate you having me on.
Now, you and I, we've known each other for quite a while. I used to work at a local restaurant, which you and your wife frequented, and so I saw you. And then when I saw you at the Mayor's State of the City address. And I found out officially that you were running for council. I have to tell you, Mike, I wasn't surprised.
Yeah,
it seemed like something. It just seemed to me like a natural progression. But for our listeners, tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, a little bit, your education, as well as some of your relevant experiences.
Right. Well, I appreciate it, Dennis. Yeah. As far as service, it's really second nature in my family. I mean, obviously, my mom. Serving our city 24 years, and she's instilled it in our family, and my father, God rest him as well, has really believed in service. My brother is serving our country now in his 19th year as a lieutenant commander, and he was deployed yesterday for a nine-month tour. In the United States Navy.
Okay.
So I just felt it was something that I knew I was going to do since I was a kid, and I just it really, for me, it was really something that has been in my mind for years, and actually has a lot to do with how I got to this stage and why I decided to actually go back and finish my education and do the things I needed to do to put myself in the right position to represent our community of Dearborn.
So what I'm hearing, you said we were just comparing notes before during the break, and you and I both went back to school.
Right.
I say later in life, and you said at 34 years old.
Yes,
it's a lot different, isn't it?
It's a big challenge. You know, I raising five children, me and my wife, and I'm the sole provider in our house. I've been in sales 19 years, and I just said to myself, you know, when the economy went down and stuff, and things were hard at Ford Motor Company where I was working, I said, you know, it's a good opportunity to go back, and you can look at everything and when it's bad, and you can look at it as a good aspect.
Absolutely.
So I went back over here at, you know, I graduated here from Henry Ford Community College in 93.
Okay.
So I had 14 years layoff. I said, you know what, I went back to U of M Dearborn. I graduated with high distinction and got a bachelor's degree in political science and psychology, and I went immediately on to law school.
Oh, now that I didn't know.
Yeah.
So you did get your law degree.
I have completed my law degree last year. I graduated with honors, and it was a great, great journey. I always joke, Dennis, I say I'm probably the only guy that gets the bill from the law school and then turns around and does not complain about it.
You looked at it as an investment.
It was obviously the best education. I did pass the Michigan Bar, too, so I'm a licensed attorney now in Michigan.
Excellent. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I have to tell you, though, going back later in life, we take it a little more seriously, don't you think?
Oh, definitely. You know what? You take it serious, more serious. You understand what's going on in the economy. And then you know what was great for me and probably for you, too, Dennis, is you can apply it right away.
Yes.
You can see, hey, you know, this is something I apply right away.
That's what I'm doing. You're right. I went back for this. You're exactly right. Now, another thing we talked about, and I don't think this is an unfair advantage. I think it's something that you can use to your advantage, and that's the family name.
Right.
Jay and I were, you know, organizing our list, and obviously we are inviting all challengers. Right. I don't know if you knew that, but we feel that the incumbents have their own advantage, their name recognition, just by being in office for however long.
Right.
So our focus was on the challengers. Now, you do qualify as a challenger, but you still have a little bit of an advantage over some of them. And let's talk about what it was like growing up in that.
Well, you know, it's really it was a great experience. I mean, my mom got elected in 85, she ran, and she was unsuccessful.
Right.
In 85. In 89, she did win, and she was successful in 89. And that was the same year that Nancy Hubbard was elected, and our current Mayor O'Reilly was elected, and I think Doug Thomas as well. So Dearborn has a really good, rich heritage. And what happens is every 20 years or so, you get a good mix of new people. And I just want to be one of those. I really feel that I have a lot to offer. And with being with my mom and understanding how local government works, I've been fortunate throughout the years because of my position in the dealership where I've been working, where people would actually come to me and say, hey, you know, I'm trying to get a hold of your mom. I have this problem with the fence. I have this problem with the garbage. You know, I have a problem with the zoning. And I would obviously turn it over to my mom, but stay involved with it to understand how it works. And I think that is a huge advantage because it's not going to be – I consider myself job ready day one.
And that's true. And I guess from the aspect of so many times something will come up that can't be handled, but you saw it through to a resolution.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? There's a solution to something and it's
– There's always there. A solution. People are genuine and they want to be treated fairly. They just want to be returned their phone calls. And I learned that in sales. That's why I finished, you know – in sales, I've been in the top 10 in the country in sales for the last 10 years, finished number 3 in the country just a couple years ago. And I don't believe it's because of so much as the sales is just you treat the people the way you'd want to be treated. It's not rocket scientists, really. Guy calls you because he has a problem. He doesn't expect you to change it in a second, but he does expect you to call back and give him some respect.
And the same thing at the dealership, I'm sure.
Yeah.
In regard to the city, and I don't know how much exposure you've had to the mayor himself, but obviously on council you'll be working with the mayor.
Mm-hmm.
In regard to his policies, do you find yourself usually in favor of his policies or maybe not?
Well, you know, it's no secret probably to some of the listeners, but the mayor has endorsed me as a candidate, and I'm the only candidate that he has endorsed that is not an incumbent. So I feel that I can work really good with the mayor, and I do like his policies because I think there's a lot of things that people don't know about that he's doing behind the scenes. And see, Jack's a little different than previous mayors. He doesn't tout what he does. He just does it. And he's really genuine, and he believes in what he does. And you'll find out things that happened later, and you didn't even know that he was the behind it. You know, like the museum that he's worked so hard to save, and the train station that's being built right now. So, I'm in favor of a lot of his policies, the way he's looking at. But there's also things that I don't agree with. You know, like for example, now this is already done policy, but I was not in favor of Habitat for Humanity building homes, and it's not because of the homes. I don't believe government should, you know, be in the business of, you know, doing housing and being involved in that. So, you know, that's something that I didn't have a chance to talk to Jack too much about, but I just don't see that as a role of us as a government. You know, I think our role is more of the services, you know, like the street sweeping, of course, our police and fire department, which – you know, I have a tremendous amount of respect and for them. And having kids, I've called them a few times, the fire department and stuff. So,
Well, you know what? And with the experience you have, albeit through, you know, watching your mother work, mm-hmm. why not run for mayor? I mean, you know, if there are enough things that you say, you know what, I want to make a difference.
Right.
Why not?
Well, I think the main thing is that you don't have enough experience at this point. I mean, there's no question that, you know, if you really want to serve, then you should have the ultimate goal to serve at the highest level if that's your capacity. And I believe I do have that capacity. I mean, I was chosen from Ford Motor Company to represent the state of Michigan in our sales advisory board in Ford. I was the only gentleman. There's only 13 nationally.
Wow.
And it was honoring. But I did my homework.
Right.
You know, and I actually got a policy change. That was the only policy change made by Ford Motor Company through that the program. So I believe I can get the work done and get things done for the city. But I do believe that, you know, to say, you know, hey, you know, would you want to run for the mayor? I think we have a very good mayor. And I think my job is to become one of those 7 candidates. And people have 7 votes. And we're just looking for one of them and
right.
get on that council and to make a difference.
Jay Koronik here. Dennis is taking a lead on this, but I just can't resist jumping in. A question that came up in our last interview, of course, being a city council candidate, it's a part-time job. So will you keep one or
both of your day jobs? I think you actually have two other careers.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, I'm like I said, I'm a father of five. My son is a first year completed in pharmacy school at the University of Toledo. Mm-hmm. So I got a lot of college bills and tuition. So, I don't have no plan on leaving the dealership anytime soon.
Okay.
And Dennis, I am a licensed attorney now. So I do some practicing, but limited because, you know, right now my focus is 100% the election, and we've been out knocking on doors and hearing the people.
Let's talk about specific issues then, if you don't mind. One that's been in the news a lot lately, your feelings on the old City Hall versus the new City Hall.
Well, that's a tough one. I mean, I'll be honest with you, the City Hall, in my opinion, I mean, it's kind of a situation where the city had to cut back 30% of their employees and save money. I mean, we're not in receivership like other cities around us. Our city is fiscally sound. We still have a very good AA bond rating, which is very good for our community. And it really only got reduced slightly because we're so heavily tied, because I read the Moody's report, and it was so heavily tied to Ford Motor Company. So they said, well, we don't know if the auto industry is on solid ground yet, so we're going to put you guys on like a, you know, be careful list. But my situation with the City Hall is it would have been great, because I'm a big believer in getting things done in the long term. You can't come to the end and say, get to the end of the road and say, should I hit the brakes? And I think the City Hall should have continued to been reinvested in throughout those years so they wouldn't get into such a stage that it is today. And that is a concern. But obviously, you have to take cuts from somewhere in order to keep the city operational. So that being said, the condition of the City Hall right now and what it's going to cost to renovate compared to the new building, I'm in favor for the move when I really look at it. And if you do your research and look at it, the art space people, I mean, they've been around as long as I've been, probably 35, almost 40. I'm 41, so in that range. They don't have a single failed project, not one. And everyone is at 90% occupancy.
Right.
It's going to bring in some good people in there. And not to tout my mom, but she's the only one that asked the hard questions on that City Hall meeting that they had. And she said, hey, let's be honest. We want to know what kind of people are going to move in. Is it Section 8 housing? I mean, let's be honest. We want to know what kind of a person is going to be coming to Dearborn.
And especially after the new business in West Dearborn that caused a lot of dissension.
The Goodwill.
Goodwill, thank you.
Right.
So many people were,
right.
So, I mean, if that, and you know, it's an argument I never even thought of. Brought up something about how it effectively looks like in the long term a better deal monetarily. You know, the city's faced with some really, really serious and quick decisions that have to be made regarding the budget. And, you know, we've talked to the mayor here. We've talked to a lot of people. You can cut your way to prosperity, but how do you increase revenue? How do you look at that?
There's a ton of way to increase revenue. There's a ton. Let me give you an example. There's some people that say, hey, you know, we got to pay the department. We got to pay people more if you want good people, you got to get people like in the private sector. And I say, you're right. But, you know, also, if you're in a government job, you know, then if you're going to treat them that way, then they should be held accountable just like in a private sector. Like me and you can lose our job the next day, right?
Right. Absolutely.
So my point is to that is there's ways to generate revenue. I'll give you an example. I look at other cities. I go out of towns and I see them. We have a beautiful facility at the Civic Center. Well, they call it the Performing Arts Center. Sorry. I'm still old school thinking of the old name. But the
Ford Community and
go.
Performing Arts
there
Center.
There you go.
That's as accurate as it gets.
But, you know, you go there, and it's a great facility, but we're subbing things out and instead of trying to work it. Now, I go to the same type of facility in Philadelphia, right? And here's a facility that turns around and gets King Tut's tomb exhibits, spends all this time getting them, gets them there, gets the tomb there, gets all this revenue generated, all this excitement, all this buzz. There's ways. We have ways to generate money without just saying cut, and sub out stuff. Well, look, we subbed out the street sweeping, right? And what happened there? They didn't do a good job.
Right.
They did a terrible job. They're not renewing it. Now the city just the other day passed the funding to go ahead and rent some new street machines so they can sweep them themselves. A government function is a government function. And some things should run on a government function. So there's a way to increase productivity and get streamlined. And the city's been doing it. But there is ways to get more out of what you have. And you don't have to do it by raising taxes. That's a number one concern I have when I talk to people that they have to me is that, you know, Livonia is cheaper. You know, this is cheaper in taxes. but they're staying in Dearborn. That's what's great about Dearborn. Right. People in Dearborn want to be in Dearborn. We're not a Royal Oak. I mean, I hear candidates say, well, it's Royal Oak, let's this. This is not Royal Oak.
Right. And, you know, and I do, and I hear that more than any other single city. Yeah. I hear Royal Oak. Let's do, we have about 4 minutes left. Let's do a couple quick hits here. What we put, we call City Essentials. The fire department, you know, there's the pending merger. How do you feel about that?
It is.
The merger,
it's merged.
Yeah, the merger went through. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, no, I knew it was approved. Well, yeah. There's still some things, sticky things, but.
Yeah. Well, the thing is with the merger, I talked with the unions, and I talked with the union department. I talked with the fire department beforehand. I talked with the fire chief several times regarding it. It's a great guy. And I'll be honest with you, as a citizen, I didn't see any advantage of it. I'm like, what's this? What do we need that for? You know? I mean, we don't want to lose any people. And what makes Dearborn great is this fire department and this police department. So when I talked to them, then I got a better understanding. See, and that's what you had to do. And I said, you know, so what's the goal behind this? Well, what happens is we can effectively – what's happening is shared services is a number one thing that's happening around the state. The state is saying you guys in municipalities got to start sharing services for cost efficiency.
Absolutely. It's a new model. Yes.
It's a new model. It is what it is. So either you're going to get run over by it or you're going to be the leader. So we chose to be the leader. We went out there to a place in Melvindale that we can effectively cover. And I'll give you a perfect example. I live over there on Law, Cherry Hill Military Area. Now, the station's right by me over there by Dearborn High. But that same station has to go across the city all the way to Southfield to reach the same run. But if with Melvindale, they actually make better service. They can get there quicker, faster. Right. And Melvindale's small enough that we can control theirs by bringing over those fires there. But I want to make something clear. The charter is really clear on how many people we have to have as a fire department. I would never vote for anything that would reduce that. I think that's pertinent.
Is there a minimum, you mean?
There's a minimum staffing level. Sure. I think it's 128. It's based on the per capita. Mm-hmm. And that was voted in years ago. So, and you know, by the fire union that foreseen that. So I like the idea, and I like the fact that what they're doing is they're taking a lead in it. Once you get into Melvindale, then you might be able to go into Allen Park. Before you know it, you know, I know it's long-term, but you could be, you know, a regional fire department that's tremendously powerful. And why not have it based out of Dearborn and be a leader?
Let's talk about what we call – that was an essential, obviously. What about some of the extras, like the hot topic, West Dearborn paid parking and towers? The paid parking and the parking towers.
Yeah, it's been a problem. I live right there, you know. And you know what? It's not so much of the 30 cents or a dollar. It's just an annoyance. And I know why the people don't like it, you know. How much does it hurt the businesses? It's been hurting them. It's a problem, you know. And again, you know, am I for it or against it? I really don't have all the details if it's profitable, how much it's making the city, you know. And then again, too, do we want to take them out and then have people getting fined and ticketed all the time?
Good point. I promise you next week at homecoming, though, it'll be profitable.
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous. Listen, do you have any personal appearances coming up? Any place that you want people to maybe fundraising or debates?
Well, we haven't had any fundraising since mid-May, and we don't believe that we should be doing any fundraising until we come out good in a primary. I believe that, you know, I went ahead and asked people for money, and they gave it to me. We did very well raising money and support, but I think it's my turn to give back. I think I have to produce on that ballot on the August 6th and see where I come in. And really, it's like a football. I'm an old, you know, I played high school football and stuff, so I'm an old fashioned, and I look at it like this. You can't look at game six and when you're in week four. And right now I have nothing planned, absolutely nothing until after this election on Tuesday. Now, of course, I'm going to be at homecoming on August 6th. I'm going to be there. My sons, my daughters and my wife are going to be there meeting, greeting people. And we plan to be there the entire day. There's a section set up, I think, by near you guys. So
not far at all.
Yeah, for us to be at so we don't disturb the other facilities.
Can you give people your contact info if they want to learn more about it?
Yeah, the best thing I say is to go check the website out. We have a fabulous website. It's there's no need to put a W. So it's Sereini, S-A-R-E-I-N-I, forcouncil.com.
The number four.
No, just for FOR.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Sereini, FORcouncil.com. There's a lot of information on there. There's videos from our fundraising that we did. And there's a lot of tweets. I'm on Twitter as well.
Okay.
And that's Sereini with the number four. Yeah. Twitter, Facebook, we're on all that social media. So.
So in 20 seconds, why should people vote for you?
They should vote for me because I'm very goal driven. When I set a goal, I attain it. I believe that Dearborn is in a situation right now where they need young, strong, aggressive leaders, and I'm one of them. There's no question I can do the job. I can say that with a straight face. I was born and raised in it. It's something I'm passionate about, and you'll never get me turn or shy away from any issue. But I tell you what I can do. I can bring people together, and I can make them get together and make a difference. I'm not going to be a guy who's just going to vote no and leave and then turn around. If I really believe in it, I'm going to get three other people next to me to believe in it and then get some changed instead of just getting stagnation. I know I can do it.
Mike Cerini, thank you so much for joining us today on The Journal. We are going to take a short non-commercial break and we'll be back after that. Yeah, thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks, Dennis.
It's back. The Patriot Act, a grotesque, ever-mutating, hydra-headed monstrosity from the Bush-Cheney Little Shop of Horrors, has risen again, this time with an added twist of Orwellian intrusiveness from the Obamacans. Since 2006, Team Bush and then Team Obama have allowed the little-known, hugely powerful National Security Agency to run a daily dragnet through your and my phone calls. All on the hush-hush, of course, not informing us spies. Now exposed, leaders of both parties are pointing to the Patriot Act, saying that it makes this wholesale everyday invasion of our privacy perfectly legal. When the story broke, Obama dissembled, calling these massive and routine violations of the Fourth Amendment modest intrusions that are worth us doing to make us more secure. He added disingenuously that Congress is regularly briefed about the program. In fact, only a handful of members are briefed, and they have been flatly lied to by Obama's Director of National Intelligence. Yet, Senator Dianne Feinstein loyally defends spying on Americans, claiming it protects us from terrorists. But then she admitted she really doesn't know how the mountains of data are being used. This is nothing but a bottomless trust us swamp, created by the panicky passage and irresponsible reauthorization of the Patriot Act. Secretly seizing everyone's phone records is, as the ACLU put it, beyond Orwellian. As a New York Times editorial flatly and rightly says, the administration has now lost all credibility on this issue. But no administration can be trusted to restrain itself from abusing the unlimited power of the Patriot Act. This is Jim Hightower saying, it's not enough to fight NSA's outrageously invasive spying on us. The Patriot Act itself is a shameful betrayal of America's ideals, and it must be repealed.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
That's right. Come on back and help WHFR celebrate Dearborn's 34th Annual Homecoming Festival, August 2nd, 3rd, and 4th in West Dearborn at Ford Field Park, 22051 Cherry Hill. Join us for all the fun, including live music, amazing food, and all the fun rides. Also, don't forget to stop on over at our WHFR tent, located across from the carnival area, and say hi, or maybe just check out our massive CD sale, where all of our CDs are just $1. WHFR will be there every day from 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. Remember, that's August 2nd, 3rd, and 4th at Ford Field Park, 22051 Cherry Hill in West Dearborn. Thanks for tuning in to the station that's making waves.
This is the new WHFR Journal, and this is Jay Koronick, and Dennis Reimar is with you for today's show. You've just heard two interviews, one with Dearborn City Council candidate Colette Richards at the start of the hour, and we just finished our second interview, this time with Mike Cerini. And, of course, these can be listened to all over again if you didn't have paper and pencil to take notes on what they said. The podcast will be available on our website shortly after the broadcast today is over, which is only about 8 minutes left. Time flies.
Wow, yeah.
We sure do talk a lot around here. I wanted to also remind you, again, you go to WHFR.fm, you click on talk shows, and then click on WHFR Journal and choose the appropriate date. Now, for something as with an important guest, I actually have the names listed there as well as the dates. But for example, May 17th on the Journal, we had Kristen Taylor running for City Council. June 28th, Jane Ahern and Mo Barrow. And so they're included in that hour. And of course, when you do these downloads, or even if you listen live directly to the stream from the website, which you can do, there's a little control on the screen, and you just click on it and drag it, and you can go fast forward. You can go up to.
Oh yeah,
you don't have to listen to what Dennis and I say in between necessarily.
But you want to.
Oh, of course you do. So this completes five of the consul candidate interviews we've done, and we hope to catch some more people at Dearborn Homecoming. The election is just a week from this coming Tuesday, August the 6th. So if you're registered in Dearborn, tell your friends, tell your neighbors, look at all the little flyers when somebody knocks on the door.
Not
and
this
says,
Tuesday.
A week from this Tuesday. A week
oh,
from.
Oh, a week from. Gotcha. Yes, I apologize. Right.
Yeah, even I think Mr. Serini said Tuesday, and he's thinking Tuesday, but it is a week from
it's
Tuesday.
It's a week, you're exactly right.
And about 10 days away from now, but it's coming up quick. And, you know, not a lot of people, for whatever reason, vote in the primary, and that's too bad because, you know, maybe a good candidate won't be there for you in November unless you vote for them and make them one of the top 14.
Exactly.
There's five incumbents and running out of the seven incumbents we have now, because of name recognition alone and perhaps some good works they've done in the past, mm-hmm. some hands they've shaken, and so on.
Kissed babies.
the odds are they'll probably get enough votes. I'd be quite surprised if all five weren't in the top 14 somewhere
right.
for November. But your choice. Now, I think Colette said you have seven votes. You don't have to use them all. Now, that's a tactic. There's always tactics with voting, too, in these situations. If you have only one candidate that you really totally believe should be elected, therefore also in the November election, you could just vote for them alone, and believe me, statistically, numerically, you're giving them a tremendous advantage. Now, if you really believe that you have three or four candidates that totally, totally should be there, that's fine. But to vote for five or six, well, you know, I kind of like this person or that person too, and I got seven votes. I don't want to waste any. No, no, no. You're actually helping the people you really, really, totally believe in by just voting for them. Now, that's a tactic. You don't have to agree with it, okay? And many people, you know, don't do it that way. But I'm just saying, statistically speaking, if you like numbers, it has a tremendous advantage to just vote only for the people you totally believe in, especially to get the field down from 21 to 14 here. Because if you're not part of the 14, there's no chance, you know, you can get elected because it's the November election that really matters.
Right.
But even there, you'll have seven votes.
But with the
but
lighter,
you don't have to do all seven, even in November. You can just pick one or two that you totally, totally want to win, and that will set them up to have a greater lead because it's not a matter of majority for the council candidates. It's just a matter of which seven get the top number of votes, and actually none of them usually get a majority because there's so many running of the votes cast. So it's not a majority. It's just the top vote getters. And so you might consider that.
That's interesting.
Just saying,
but, especially now when there's traditionally less voters for the primary, there would be an even more advantage. Yeah, good thing.
I'm just going to hit a couple of headlines because, of course, coming up in 5 minutes is Highway 61, the best in the blues with Joanne Kaye for the next 4 hours on WHFR.FM, the station making waves. Some of the top headlines here. It's interesting to me, and it's an older story, and we can't go into the details, but I read the details. I really didn't believe the court ruling. The federal courts have said the Dearborn Heights School District, that is Crestwood, discriminated against Arabs in their community.
Okay.
Because, why? They didn't have an Arab-American speaking teacher.
Right.
And do any counseling in the second language for Arab-American students. I think those are the two main issues. I don't, you know, some of you may say, well, do you have to speak Arabic? I thought English was supposedly the legal language in this country. Isn't there some burden placed on the students coming to you? And I don't know what the ESL or English as a Second Language program is like in Crestwood or how they do it there. I'm not even sure how they still do it in Dearborn, but there is one.
Sure.
It used to be very aggressive. That is very, very successful at trying to teach English, improve the levels of English for people who were either recent immigrants or came from families who just chose not to speak English at home at all.
Well, based on the ruling, I would think that it's inferior, right? And that's basically what they're saying.
Yeah, well, things are going to have to change. I would just like to say as a comment here, even though I thought, well, this is just wrong for the federal government to say this, that it doesn't have to work out this way. But just remember, just like whether it's, I hate to mention Trayvon Martin or any other big time court cases, if you're not on the jury in the courtroom, and listening to the judge and the various rulings, you don't really know all the details.
You're right.
And even then, you may have a difference of opinion. But, you know, those of us outside, we can give our opinions and our feelings. What matters is the rule of law when all the information is presented. And I'm just saying, only those people in the courtroom, they could still get it wrong somehow. But, you know, trying to stay logical and rational and look at the laws and look at the actual situation, nobody can do a better job than the courts. Maybe it'll be appealed. I don't think it will be, though. I didn't read that in the story.
But don't forget that this story goes back a year. I covered a counselor who felt discriminated against from Crestwood a year ago. In fact,
that's where it came from, I think.
Exactly. Yeah, and here it is a year later, and and they felt it injustice.
Mm-hmm. Hi. Okay. I did read also another quick note here. Last week with HSCC President Stan Jensen, very interesting interview for the whole hour. And again, that was July 19th. Listen to the podcast if you missed it. He's our new president, our spokesperson to the community. He gave a great presentation, I thought, about the situation we're in and why and what we're doing and we're doing a lot to try to get out of it. But we need our millage renewed, and we need a little bit more to make up for what, well, the people of Dearborn haven't been paying for the last 5 years that we've been expecting. Raw dollars have not been coming here. Same argument that the city of Dearborn made on theirs. And so we're asking for a little more millage and the renewal of what we had, which isn't raising that much anymore. And still, it's going to be fewer dollars than what you had to pay out before 2008 each year. Anyway, it does say in the story from last Sunday's Press and Guide at the bottom of that article about HSCC millage that a bond issue will definitely be on the November issue for Dearborn Public Schools. I didn't think it had been finalized.
I didn't either.
I didn't think they had decided the amount or the details. I know it's for maintenance. I know it's for general. It's something like $80 to $100 million last time I read about it.
Right.
Huge. But the buildings need repair. And so they were going to ask for bond issue. But they seemed to say, oh, that bond issue is going to be there. Well, that remains to be seen by me, but oh well. By the way, the Dearborn City Council did vote this last Tuesday. It was only in patch.com, didn't get into the Press and Guide this Wednesday because it only happened Tuesday night. Did approve the negotiations for the sale of City Hall to ArtServe. Now, that had to be done or they can't apply for the grants. There was a deadline in August in order to get the $17 million they need from the state and other places, I guess, in order to make possible the sale. So,
what is it, like a purchase agreement?
They're not going to move in. Yeah, it just means that, yes, they've agreed to the purchase and they've got, now they've got to raise the money to pay for it. They've got, I think, 10 months, 12 months. If they don't get it in the first round, apparently they can resubmit the same proposal in ArtSpace in other places. Often got it on the second go-round.
Absolutely. Mike Shreen even said how effective they are at getting their funding.
Right. So they've done this before, although I don't think in Michigan before.
No.
Am I wrong on that?
No.
So Michigan, oh, my God.
Especially this area.
Yeah, and budgets being what they are in the state and so on. So we'll see about that. But I'm just saying everybody voted yes on that. I think somebody was absent. I think Brian O'Donnell was absent this time. Suzanne Serini must have voted for him. But, of course, Ted Tofalsky. Tom.
I'm going to just have him change his name.
He should change his name. He really should, yeah. Tom Tofalsky did vote no, as he said he was against the sale all the way along. He's going to vote against it no matter what it is now, just to let people know that he hasn't changed his mind on that. Okay.